Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight.
So we don't have a problem in terms of spending on education. We don't have a problem when it comes to spending on research and development. We do have a long-term problem that has to do with our health care programs, Medicare and Medicaid. The good news is that in part because of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, costs have actually gone down, or the health care inflation has gone down to the slowest rate that we've seen in a long time. So we're starting to get health care costs under control.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, let's start Bill Haley again.
7 o'clock,
it is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation.
Rock, we're going to rock around the clock tonight.
Long day's journey in tonight for me. I got up at 4:30 this morning. Welcome to the program. I don't know about you, but the news is so horrible. The deceit is so great. The interracial crime is so high. The lies coming out of the White House are so vile. The lack of coverage in the media is so debilitating that I feel narcoleptic on the Savage Nation today. It's the end of August. I mean, really, look how far we've gotten together. If you realize it's the 23rd of August and normal people are in Provence or wherever they go, Tuscany, Provence, I have no idea why they go there. What do they do there? How can they take themselves? How can they sit and drink every afternoon and tell themselves how lucky they are to be in Tuscany or Provence? How many fine meals can they have and congratulate themselves and their friends about being so lucky to be sitting here in the south of France? Enjoying the beauty of France. How can they take it? That's why I sit here in front of the microphone. I have to admit, look, it's the last word in talk radio. That's true. And today being Friday, it's open mic to mic. Any topic is fair game. And I've touched on big ones this week. People are saying, how is the media so bad that they don't even report that Obama has a brother who's running the Muslim Brotherhood? You remember Wally Schubert last night? One of the best shows I've ever did in my life. Lost. Now I wake up today. The news is worse. It turns out that, see, here's the problem with me. I'm a born cynic. I was cynical, not born cynically. I can't say born. I was cynical at age five, six, I realized I was cynical. Whether it was a product of my tutelage from my immigrant father, I have no idea, but I was so cynical at 5 years old. So I don't trust anybody or anything. I've been telling you that there's a one-party system in the country for the longest of times. I've told you it's, it's shades of left, shades of red. The Republicans are Democrat light, blah, 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 Republican, Democrat. I wake up this morning, I see this article. Romney's top donor teams with Soros front group on immigration reform. What? According to a new report from USA Today, GOP mega donor Paul Singer is helping fund the National Immigration Forum for its Evangelical Immigration Table Initiative. Singer is the founder and CEO of Wall Street hedge fund Elliott Management Corp. and the man who made Mitt Romney's 2012 campaign for president happen. Now, I told you I had dinner with Romney before the election up at the North Beach restaurant, 101, him and I, nice guy, liked him a lot. He would have been a better president than Obama in many ways. At least I would have slept at night not feeling that they were, you know, flying black helicopters against the American flag. But when I brought up immigration, he said, well, I can't really say anything about it, blah, 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 it would be considered racist, so, you know. So here we are. Here we are. These people are more dangerous than Filthy Filner. The false Republicans are more dangerous than the degenerate Filthy Filner. At least Filner was caught with his pants down, and we know who he is. The Republicans have not yet been caught with their pants down playing two sides against the middle. That's the problem. Filthy Filner resigned today, the guy from San Diego. Does anyone out there, anyone listening to the show know who I'm talking about? The degenerate San Diego mayor for touching women, this and that. Allegedly touching women, pardon me. Here's the thing about it. He looks like Mel Brooks as a younger man. Now, I couldn't understand who he looked like, Filthy Filner. Didn't he look like Mel Brooks, really? Like, you know, all he needed was the same face. Why are they all Democrats, the women grabbers, the women molesters? I don't understand. The Republicans are like, oh, they don't even look at women. Oh, no. Married to Maud for these 43 years, never looked at another one. Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Unfortunately, they're not married to America. That's the problem. They're married to Maud. So here are some of the questions and topics for the Savage Nation, if you don't have any, and it's Friday. Usually the calls are slower on Friday, believe it or not. Normal people are in Provence or in the south of France, or they're visiting their relatives in Sicily, or they're on Mulberry Street eating clams or reganada, or they're sitting outside in a barbecue joint somewhere. They're not listening to talk radio. They know it all. They know the country's in very good hands, in the hands of Obama, and they feel good. They feel very good about America, so they don't listen to talk radio, but you do. So here are some of the questions for the Savage Nation for this Friday. Number one, the Muslim major Nidal Hassan was found guilty on all counts today. Let's hear a round of applause. Nidal Hassan convicted in Fort Hood shooting. A military jury today convicted Army Major Nidal Hassan of 13 counts of murder, 30 counts of attempted murder, November 2009, shooting rampage at Fort Hood, Texas, where he killed all those people in cold blood, shooting them in the head as they lay on the ground dying. Now, I could say to you, this is great news, but do you actually think the Army will send him to a shooting squad? What do you call that, a shooting squad? I don't even know what it's called, because they don't do it anymore. Firing squad. Do you think they will give him the death penalty? I don't think so. NSA analyst intentionally abused spying powers multiple times. That's boring. Why is that a boring topic? You know, it's interesting. That topic, you're not going to... Who cares about the NSA spying on us? You assume they do it, right? Especially under Obama, who you know is a left-wing communist dictator. So why shouldn't they spy on everybody while he lies about it? His ambassador, Samantha Power, who's married to a left-wing psychotic named Cass Sunstein, missed the Syria session for a personal trip. They found her in Ireland today. That's after the news broke of a gas attack in Syria. I suppose her husband, Cass Sunstein, had a gas attack from the corned beef and cabbage in Ireland, but that's no excuse to stay away from the meeting. Coburn, remember Coburn? Brilliant man from the heartland. Senator Coburn, by the way, a doctor, by the way, said that there's a possibility of impeachment at a town hall today. And, of course, the left went berserk. When it was raised about Bush, no problem. Now, all of a sudden, every one of the left-wing fanatics is out there saying, how dare you talk about impeachment for our guy. For example, today, Obama's brain, David Axelrod, the lifetime leftist street agitator, went on his favorite outlet today, More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks, in clip three, suggested that impeachment is a terrible thing to talk about. Listen to clip three.
When you think about the history of the last 20 years and the escalation of this kind of rhetoric, there are consequences for this country, not just for this president. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be an impeachment. But when you know, what we've seen obviously? Is a... Qualified by both sides, by the way, but I think more so by the Republicans, disqualify whoever is the president of the United States, not just debate them, not just disagree with them, but render them illegitimate. And that is dangerous for this country.
Okay, now here's the question. Do you feel Obama is an illegitimate president, or, don't bring up the birth certificate, that's a dodo. What has Obama done that's impeachable? Now remember, the standards are pretty high. You know, grounds for impeachment are very high. They have to be crimes or misdemeanors, right? High crimes or misdemeanors. High crimes, not high times. We're talking about high crimes, not high times. High crimes and misdemeanors. So what crime, other than expanding the power of the executive branch, stepping on everyone's rights, these are very clever people. Have they actually committed high crimes and misdemeanors? What are they? I mean, it's an interesting question, and I'd like your answer. 855-407-282. Then there's the interracial murder going on in the country, one after the other, not covered by the media. You know, this is very, it's a troubling time to live in. And you see, no one seems to care about it. It's the Savage Nation, open mic to mic. Any topic is fair game. 855-407-282. I'm trying to build up the caller base. We have already three in the tent. See, here's the thing about talk radio that you don't know. as a veteran of broadcasting these 19 and a half or some odd years, what you have to do is understand that the audience is not the same every day, not in size, not in intensity, not in intelligence level, not an interesting level. No, it's never the same. There are regulars, but they don't even listen every day. That's the first thing you got to know. There's no one listening every second to what, you know, brilliant statements come out of your mouth or whatever news you're exposing. It's a rotation. It's a rotation job. So on a Friday, it's a slower show to begin with. A lot of normal people are coming home from dinner right now. They don't even know what's going on, nor do they care. They have indigestion. They're going to home. They can't wait to go home to take an Alka-Seltzer or an Nexium. That's all they know. They have indigestion from the clams oreganata and the cheap wine that they had down on Mulberry Street. They have no idea why they feel sick. They feel they're having a heart attack. They don't know whether they should be cremated if they die. They're getting the flashes right now, many of them. Many people, even young people, fear death after a heavy meal in bad restaurants. And they get a sweat and a cold sweat. They're with the wife and kids or with the wife. And the guy says, oh, my God, I'm only 40, 41. My father, what if I die? Then all in a flash. Should I be buried? Should I be cremated? Where should I be buried? Should it be an air-conditioned coffin? Should it be a mausoleum? I don't know. I don't want to plan about it. This goes through the mind in about 30, 40 seconds. All in a flash, either while they're driving or the wife is driving. Then they get home and it passes. The pain goes up from the stomach to the right shoulder. They're convinced when it hits the right shoulder of the gas, they're dead. They're positive they've had a heart attack, and they're ready to call 911 the minute they get in the door. And then all they got to do is loosen their pants. You know, by the way, the next time you think you're dying, I'll give you a little hint. Loosen your pants and take three deep breaths and take an aspirin. And then dial 855-400-7282, and I'll pick up the call. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Would you like some schmaltz on that bagel? Look, it's Friday. What do I care? I'll do what I want. Filthy Filner is gone. We can breathe a sigh of relief. Every day, the brainwashing. Transgender this, transgender that. They make them more sacred than nuns. I never saw anything like it. It's like a new holy grail in America. Transgender is a new category where they're cleaner than a nun, better than a nun, more revered than a nun. It's every I never saw the brainwashing. The brainwashing. Every day. And then the news is so depressing, and it's such a cover-up. It is such a cover-up. I mean, the same every day. Day in and day out and day in and day out. There's no opposition press. Nothing. Nothing. The poor white man, 89 years old, survives getting shot on Okinawa in World War II to be beaten to death with flashlights by two black youths for no reason other than he was white, not reported by the media. And if you report it, they claim you're being racially insensitive or worse yet, a racist per se. That follows on the heels of the poor kid who was jogging in Oklahoma, shot by two blacks and one white. That, again, is not a racial incident. They say there's no reason to say it was racial implication. Oh, really? No kidding. Go look at the guy's website and see what he said. I knocked out five woods today. Wood is a dirty word for white people. Racist, through and through. 8554. Oh, I had a terrible lunch, the worst lunch of my life, and I'm sluggish from it. I don't know whether to give up lunch completely for the show now. My whole food thing is off. No, you know, I talk a lot about food. I go to the Indian buffet, and I complain about it, and I stop going. The one near the highway, I'm not going. It's gotten skimpier and skimpier. As it's been discovered by the Mexican gardeners, they've cut back on everything, but the chicken's horrendous. Scrawny, cold. They have one vegetable dish, the rice pilaf, bad bread, and then some like bone curry. Some poor lamb they slaughtered on the way down in a truck. But there's a good Indian one in the city I go to. When I get into the city, we have like seven vegetable courses. You know, and I happen to like potato dishes and cauliflower. I didn't go to the Indian today. I went below Indian. I was in a bad mood because I got up at 4:30. I was just tired. Did you ever get up too early and you know you shouldn't, but you can't help it because your mind's racing? See, I have a rule. If I awake at that first dawn, the dog looks at me like I'm insane. It's dark out. He will not go out. It's like, oh, come on, man. Get back in bed. Go to the bathroom. Do what you got to do. And please, don't wake me up and don't put me out there in the dark. I hate the dark. I'm not going out there. He's smarter than me. So, okay, Teddy, I'll go back to bed. Back in bed, head on the pillow, and there it goes, the swirling mind. Every problem in my life from childhood to now comes up. Everything comes up, but you're a victim of your own mind. So I made a decision years ago, don't lay there and take it, get up. If you do anything when you can't sleep, it's better off than laying there and worrying, right? Unfortunately, it didn't work today. I got up too early. I set the clock off wrong. So then I went back to sleep at 9:30 after Irene got the dog. Twice a week, he gets picked up by Irene, the dog care person, who's cared for him since he's a baby and the other dogs. And so 2 days a week, I'm without the guy. The minute he left, I took a bike ride, figuring it would pump me up. I came back more dead than before. I said, this is enough. I pull the curtains, pull the shades, lock the doors, load the gun, turn on the alarm, turn off the cell phone, unplug the phone, and bang, go back to sleep. So you go, okay, good. 30 minutes later, I'm up. Hey, I feel better. I've restarted my clock. But it didn't work. I couldn't trick my body. So lunchtime came. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to get Indian. You know what I did? I ruined. It's just awful. I made white rice, which isn't the bad part. That's the good part. I took one of those, like, cooked chickens from a supermarket, which I eat. I eat three of them a week. The dog and I eat these cooked chickens. Like, it's Mary's chicken. So it's supposed to be a better, happier chicken, like a hippie chicken. It's not like a stupid, dirty, regular, prosaic chicken. It's a happier chicken. It was glad to have its neck broken and thrown into a bag. Okay. I took the cooked chicken. I threw it into a pan with the onions and the red pepper and the this and that. I heated it up in the pan, the olive oil. I put on the rice and I put on the rice. Okay, I'll make Spanish rice and chicken. It was horrible. It was so awful that I had to go to the mall afterwards to get over the lunch that was so bad. And I made another mistake. I bought a pumpkin muffin, and I never eat sweets. I was like chasing. You know, you ever start chasing your blood sugar? I was chasing it. And I shouldn't have done it. I went there to buy a fruit salad, I swear to God, just for you. But I didn't make it to the counter. I ate the muffin before I hit the counter. And now I get to the radio show, and the blood sugar collapses again because it's all off key, the whole thing. So I drank tea with honey. So now I have the glucose flying in my brain. And it's around 6:30 here on the West Coast. I'm starting to feel my energy come up from the adrenaline of the show.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Look at him sway with it.
Where is he today? He was loved by married women. They always said, oh, he's out of... My day, like the mothers, if there was an entertainer, the first thing the mothers would say... turn him off, was he was a family man and he never cheated on his wife. The women cared about it in those days. I would listen. I was in the, they would be in the kitchen moving around the breadcrumbs with the serrated knife on the oilcloth tablecloth in Queens. The women would talk. I don't know why. I was always in the dining room listening to what the wise women were saying. That was before the wise Latinas arrived. There actually were wise women around before them, believe it or not. Some of them were ordinary people, in Queens, New York, and they'd sift the crumbs with their serrated bread knives. And by the time the coffee hour was over and those women got through talking and the crumbs were very finely sifted, they had resolved all the personal problems in their lives and all of the world's problems. And I felt the world was a good place to live in, you know. But one of the, like Perry Como, I was thinking, when he sang, no one knows who he is anymore. The women liked him. Why? Because he was known as a family man. That's how they judged an entertainer. If he was a no-good rat, like a filthy filler, they wouldn't listen to him. They wouldn't go to his records, nothing. Today, it's the opposite. 15 people show up at Bloomberg anti-gun... 15 people show up at Bloomberg anti-gun rally. That's a hot one. That is a hot one. I can't do the Shorty death. I can't do the death of the little old man. I can't do it anymore. There's a race war brewing. It's being fanned by, well, let us just say there's a race war being fanned by some very bad elements in this country. Very bad. Because for a guy who comes out and talks about the Trayvon Martin tragedy and then says nothing about the beating to death of a little old white man and the shooting of an innocent white runner shows you which side of the aisle this guy is on with regard to racial enmity. That's all. And I don't want to go into it. It's Friday night. That's all. I'll take callers. 855-407-282. It's the Savage Nation. Any topic is fair game. Let's begin. I'll begin on the East Coast. WABC in the heart of New York City. Bobby, welcome to the Savage Nation. Bobby, what's on your mind?
Hi. Oh, God, you cracked me up. You're terrific. You remind me of my tuna fish crowd that used to sit in the back steps at City College. We were all first-generation Americans, too afraid to pick up the South Campus girls, so we would sit there eating our tuna fish salad sandwich.
I know the crowd. And when I was a kid at Queens College, it was largely first-generation Americans like myself. And there were two cafeterias. There was the little cafeteria where the intellectuals went, mainly the hot nymphomaniac chicks with long blonde hair that we were just awed by. And then there was the big cafeteria where regular people went.
Oh, the girls at Queens College were beautiful. I took a couple of summer courses, but I was too much of a nerd to make any action, but they were gorgeous.
Yeah, but look, where are you today and where are they today? Most of them are with the transfusion tree in Boca Raton, if they're still alive. And yeah. and you're still pumping along there. I mean, you must have, you sound like you got the Ever-Ready battery.
No, they're sitting around in Florida complaining or wearing the peace symbol, complaining that they're not Jane Fonda and making...
Why are they still wearing the peace symbol belts from the 70s? Who are they angry at? Who is it who's conducting the war but their own hero?
Their own Meshuggah. What do you want?
Yes, that's an old German word for crazy.
Exactly.
Now, what is Bobby, what's your question tonight on the Savage Nation?
The question was, I grew up on Gene Shepard, one of the greatest raconteurs of all time. And you're getting real close to being like him. He was one.
Oh, thanks for the half compliment. I appreciate it. But the answer is no. Everyone says, oh, you remind me of Gene Shepard. I must tell you, I swear to you, as God is my witness, I have no recollection of having... Most young people do not listen to talk radio. I'm talking 15, 16. They don't listen to it. I listen to music. That's all I listened to as a kid. Occasional ball game. That's it. I was the average, you know, kid. I didn't even know what talk radio was. I had no... My father, I found out years later. I found out from relatives because he died before... Well, he died in 1970. I heard he was a big talk radio fan. Maybe he had it on in the background and I didn't even know it.
Well, it wasn't exactly talk. It was sort of like telling everything that you do.
Well, he didn't go to Indian buffets because there were no Indian buffets in those days. Did he talk about a dog?
No, it was wonderful. He would talk about everything from World War II through present day without putting any political slant on anything.
Oh, he avoided politics, which is why he remained a local host.
Well,
he never made it into the National League. I mean, he was a good local host, so... I don't remember him. He died in 1999. I just looked it up on Google. Well, I like that you're listening. You're Friday night, obviously. You got nothing else to do. You have no friends, no family, no lovers, right? So I'm it.
You. But you sound real good.
Thank you. I like the half compliment. That shows he went to Brooklyn College, that he can't give a full compliment. Instead of saying, I love your show, I listen to Gene Shepard, and you're better. No, you're almost as good as him, you hear? But this is the way I grew up with this. You never get a straight-out compliment, ever. I did get a compliment today. An article was written in the local San Francisco Rag by Rich Lieberman, 415 Media. And I got to tell you, I don't know Rich. He writes a radio blog. I'll read you parts of it. And he's in the most psychotically liberal, intolerant, intellectually dishonest market in the world, which is San Francisco. So he came to like my show over the years, and he wrote, I got another email. It was about my, quote, savage fetish. I put it up on michaelsavage.com if you want to read it. So I'll read you a few lines from it. Savage fetish? What's that? Was I amused? No. Was I irritated? No. I get a lot of email. No biggie. Part of the trade. It did annoy me, he writes, that this particular emailer said that I had a fetish with my various writings about Michael Savage, as if it were against the law here in the high and mighty progressive San Francisco Bay Area, to dare opine that Savage ruled the market, which he does. Hell, he's the de facto king of the syndicated radio world. How do I know, he writes? Have you listened to the current tripe? Are you kidding? It's not even close. Savage, he says, but we'll leave it now for the Bay Area per se. He writes, Savage has always intrigued me as something of a broadcast raconteur, a virtual artist who paints a different tapestry each and every day. He can be irksome, slightly crazy in a sort of entertaining way, but he gets you. Now, people have always underestimated my genius. They've always called it crazy, Rich. You got to understand that you need an education level to understand where genius begins and craziness ends. And I forgive you your lack of education, but okay. He goes on, he says, he invigorates you, he makes you listen, and he has you gushing, laughing, commiserating, and in full messianic state of mind virtually the entirety of his program. That's good writing. That's a pretty damn good template. In far contrast, he writes, we have here in the Bay Area a bunch of self-serving, narcissistic, impish poseurs with a pimple of savage's talent. Hey, way to go, Rich. That's not a knock necessarily. It's just the gosh darn truth with a healthy piled high scoop of reality. Good writing, Rich. Ron Owens, he writes, the morning audio scribbler long ago checked out and left his KGO show to where it is today, a mishmash of predictable go-to-em initiate that is supposedly still the mainstay among his dwindled listeners. Only Owens, who continues to sell mattresses and other tired two-bit topics on a daily basis, is now simply irrelevant. Remind me, these are his comments, not mine. I don't know who Owens is. I heard of him years ago. I used to call him Mr. Softy. I don't call him that anymore because I don't want to hurt his feelings. Those few sycophants who still listen, maybe it's they who have a real fetish. Ron Owens, even his twilight, even when he checked out a long time ago, could at least do a decent hour of political interviews and a cup full of novelty. Now, having arrived merely to get one last hurrah and a few paychecks, is lost in the daily shuffle. He sounds bored, tired, uninspired, like he walked in from a deep sleep. Maybe the mattress affiliation is perfect symmetry. He's just damn tired and uninteresting, makes you want to go to sleep. How ironic, in the land of so-called tolerance and progressive worth, do we have such a lack of tolerance and intellectual dishonesty, he writes. That's not an opinion, it's a fact. We like to think that here in the San Francisco area that we're special, that we're above the fray, above the tepid screaming and yelling, polarized climate. BS, he writes. We're the biggest hypocrites around. We espouse openness and ask for, insist upon, freedom of thought and opinion, even if we don't necessarily agree. Yeah, right. Again, totally unmitigated BS to the 10th power. Truth is, we're nothing even remotely like that, to which we like to brag and make ourselves out to be special and unique. And he goes on and on. And here's where the dynamic of a Michael Savage stands out. Savage, we're told, don't listen to him. He's an SOB. A bizarre, scary SOB. You know what? That's why I listen. He writes, why I've become a regular and decided to buy in, not because I necessarily buy into his politics. Savage is consistent, and his show, unlike the wussy, sweet nothings of the local radio glee clubs, has a ton of genuine residue, command, performance, and pathos. It's like a fine dinner and wine that you sit down to and enjoy, even if you quietly worry about the extra carbs you probably don't need. Savage is genuine, too. For better or worse, he doesn't always come across as warm and fuzzy, but at least he's not intellectually or personally dishonest. And he goes on and on and on. He can tell funny stories and mix in a tale or two about meatballs, Chinese food, his dog Teddy, and crank and make you squirm, but at least you know where he's coming from and can put up with it. The other posers, the phonies, the quasi-intellectuals who think their blank doesn't think, are mere pretenders, morsels, sweet nothings, and they bore me, he writes. I'm tired of pretending to apologize that I like Michael Savage. And he goes on. He says, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of anything like Larry King that entertains me, makes me curious, makes me want to tune in, something that is predictably unpredictable. A few weeks back, Savage was talking about human frailness. It was interesting. He stopped and coughed. He complained that the Indian food he consumed a little earlier had made him uncomfortable. It was a classic. It proceeded to make me belly laugh. I don't know why. Maybe it's an acquired taste, but I laughed. Later in the hour, Savage spoke of the Berkeley liberals who eat only gluten-free pizza, praise the Messiah Obama, and spread sprouts on their limited lawn. As I do frequently, I stopped, I gathered it in, I shook my head with a bit of a squirm. I thought, yo, Mike, did you have to say Messiah? How cruel, how terse, how inflaming, how true too, damn it. And he goes on, and then he ends like this. He says, Savage is not for everybody, and at times even me, but I'm carved into the mix. Rich writes, my Jewish mother is from Brooklyn and is a harsh critic. She doesn't laugh at anything. She hated E.T. and thought she looked a lot like Yoda. She thought The Wizard of Oz was too long. She doesn't like chicken soup, but she laughs with Michael Savage. Go figure. The article is... The article is by Rich Lieberman, 415 Media, and he calls me the king of syndicated radio. And thank you, Rich. I still haven't met Rich, by the way. I don't go out with the guy and ask him to do it. But he's gone into the radio world on a local station. He's come to understand what it's like to walk in the other man's microphone for 10 minutes. And I, you know, I want to bring it up to another area here. I could do a lot of politics, and you know I do. I do it all week. But I realize something. Sometimes I hear Obama speak, and I want to scream. And I wish that I could get a question in once. I wish somebody in the media would ask him one question. Like, is there any truth to the fact that your brother Malik Obama runs a front group of the Muslim Brotherhood, and your IRS gave him a 501c3 status? A question like that. You know, is it true that there were Scud missiles in Libya that your ambassador was trying to ship to the Syrian rebels? Or another question, why do you continue to back the enemies of America who we apparently are fighting and you're backing? Questions that are not being asked. And then I realized he's insulated, he's the president, he'll never answer any real questions. But then I realized in some ways talk show hosts are not dissimilar. We do take calls, but they're screened. They're screened. And if we get a crazy, angry, hating caller, we don't take them. And we don't take them not because I can't handle them. I could. They're bad radio. If you were listening to the radio show, do you want to hear screaming and yelling? I turn it off. It's not good radio. But I will dare say that if you have a legitimate criticism of anything I've actually said, I'll take your call. If you're going to start calling and cursing me out, you're not going to get on number one. And if you have no point to make, there's no point in calling. But I'll take criticism. Go ahead. Make my day. Tell me what I actually said, not what you think I said, or what you thought I said, or what you imagined I said, or what you read I said, or what you think I said. Tell me what I actually said that was A, false, or B, offensive. Is that fair enough? I don't know if you'll get on. There's absolutely no room to get on, truthfully, right now. Although it's Friday night, and the tent is not 100% full, the board is sold out. I just wanted to tell you one last thing. When I began a radio, I had an image of what radio shows are. You're like a preacher inside a revival tent. And it's a huge revival tent, a giant revival tent. And we're known by AQH, average quarter hour. The average quarter hour could be 60,000. It could be 600,000. It could be enormous. But just imagine a baseball stadium-sized tent. Now, sometimes you go into that tent, and there's nobody waiting for you. It's an empty auditorium along the lines of Obama's speeches lately. Other times you come in there waiting for you. The stadium is packed. But most of the time, it's a quarter full and they start to come in. And if you do a good show, that stadium gets packed by the end of the first hour. There's standing room only. And then if it's really good, by the second hour, they're outside that tent with their ears against the canvas. You understand the imagery that I use? It's a one-man band. And you have to use imagery, or else you wind up like Filthy Filner. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Platters. The news is horrible. The only good news is that Nidal Hassan, the Muslim major who slaughtered 13 in cold blood, shooting some in the head, including killing a pregnant soldier woman, and shot 32, was found guilty on all counts today. The problem is he'll never get the shooting gallery. He'll never get it. They're afraid of giving. If it was Timothy McVeigh, he would have been roasted already. WABC in New York City. Lorraine, you're up on the Savage Nation topic, please.
The topic is how you handle your callers on occasion, and I love everything else about you.
So tell me what you don't love about me.
Okay. I'm 76, but I feel 30, and I hear people's voices. I hear how frightened they are, and they've waited a while, and they want so desperately to get something across. You will not lose our attention if you give them a little more time.
All right, I understand. Don't be frightened. I hear you yourself are having a little tachycardia right now.
I'm one of those hyper people.
No, I get it. You sound like a younger woman. That's true.
Well,
let me explain something about talk radio. It's a technique you must understand. A caller at the end of the day is just like a song that a disc jockey is playing. If the song is too slow, you gotta throw the record out. The people will hang up the show. I'm telling you point blank, you have to have an ear for an audience. Like now, are you there, Lorraine?
I am.
Lorraine, okay, goodbye. See, I'm hanging up on you. Why? Because if I put you back up, they would turn the show off. They would switch to a basketball game or something, ice hockey. They would switch to a show with the sounds of animals being tortured in Bangladesh or in China rather than listen to somebody take 8 minutes to make a point. I had someone write me last night. They said, I'm glad you hung up on that person because you're going to give him ADD. The guy was listening. He's a professional. He said you hung up on someone because you said you're going to give me ADD if I listen to you anymore. And he laughed. He said, I would have gotten ADD waiting for him to make a point. That's all. It's not that I'm mad at you personally. It's a rhythm, a pace, a speed. And that's all there is to it. Yes, there's news. Yes, there are stories. And yes, you know, it depends about where the mood goes. I will take your calls. It's been a very big week. And if you missed last night's show with Waleed Shubat about Obama's brother, we have a two-minute short version of a 20-minute interview that you're probably going to want to hear in the next hour, and I'm going to play it for you. And now for those of you who are quasi-lost religious figures, I'll give you your Bible reading. Isaiah 11. Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning. You hear that? Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that tarry late into the night, till wine inflame them. That's dedicated to all of the partygoers tonight in their cars, heading out to the clubs. And the harp, and the tabre, and the pipe, those are the instruments, and the wine are in their feasts. They regard not the work of the Lord. Therefore my people are gone into captivity. In other words, you don't actually have to be captured to be a captive. By losing your soul to this lifestyle of lasciviousness, you actually are enslaved. That's what he's saying in Isaiah. Now, no rabbi or preacher generally says that to you. They make it too literal, so you walk out of the place saying it's not real, right?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-407. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Nobody thinks that's good for the middle class. And I've made this argument to my Republican friends privately. And by the way, sometimes they say to me privately, I agree with you, but I'm worried about a primary from, somebody in the Tea Party back in my district. Or I'm worried about what Rush Limbaugh is going
to
say.
Who stole the ding-dong? Who stole the bell? Welcome to the Savage Nation. Now he's worried about Republicans now. This is Obama's new scam. Now he's worried about Republicans who may be knocked out of office by actual patriots, you hear? Now suddenly that's his biggest problem. Of course it's his problem. Of course it's his problem. They have a one-party system. He doesn't want the parties to be shaken by an actual American party. That's all. It's Open Mic to Mike Friday, 855-407-282. If you just joined us, you missed a lot of, I think, fun stuff. Some news, views, and reviews. Nothing earth-shaking, you know. Here's something earth-shaking. This came from the Daily Caller late in the day. A guide published by your Defense Department calls the Founding Fathers extremist. I'm going to read this to you cold. A Department of Defense teaching guide meant to fight extremism advises students that rather than, quote, dressing in sheets, modern-day radicals, quote, will talk about individual liberties, states' rights, and how to make the world a better place, close quote. Then the DOD manual describes 18th-century American patriots seeking freedom from the British as belonging to, quote, extremist ideologies. The guide comes from documents obtained by Judicial Watch and is authored by the Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, a DOD-funded diversity training center. Now, how many years have I told you diversity is a code word for perversity? And I'm not referring to sexual deviancy. I'm talking about psychological perversity. This is a document that says our founding fathers were extremists. Can you believe this? And where are they getting this from? They're getting it from none other. Shall I name the organization? I think you know who it is. The Questionable, Dangerous Southern Poverty Law Center as the resource in identifying hate groups. This SPLC defined the American family a family association as a hate group. And by the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center has never named a Muslim group, so far as I know, as a hate group. So your government has been taken over from top to bottom by the most radical anti-American elements ever seen in the history of this country. Good. Now that I've done politics, I can move on. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Let's go to the callers. WWTN, Randy, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, how are you tonight?
What's up? What's up, Randy? Where are you calling from? What city?
I'm calling you from Irwin, Tennessee.
And what's on your mind?
I just wanted to thank you. You opened my eyes. 4 months I've been listening to you. Got the nerve up tonight to call you. And I just wanted to tell you thank you. And any day that you run for presidency, I will be the first one to vote for you.
Isn't that beautiful?
By golly, I will vote for
Randy,
you.
Randy, I want to tell you and everyone else, as I've told people for years, I don't confuse myself with a revolutionary nor a politician. I am a talk show host, and I'm also giving you one man's opinion. And I thank you for the audience. That's all I need. All I need is the audience. I don't need office. I don't need power. I don't want it. I don't want it at all. Not at all. 85, that opens up a line, 855-407-282 is the phone number. Arlington, Tennessee. We're getting a lot of Tennessee callers tonight. Arlington, Tennessee, WHUB, Chi-Chi. You're on the Savage Nation. Chi-Chi, what's on your mind?
Obama is crashing and burning globally, and he's sending us into a world war going up against Syria because Russia's going to react. And these other reporters just sit there reading these anti-American propaganda teleprompters like Lord Ha Ha. You know, they don't...
Oh, you remember Lord Ha Ha. You must be a bit of a historical buff.
Yes, I am.
Yes, you're one of the few people who know who Lord Haha was. That's interesting. Oh, we have a real treat for you and everyone else. We never played the Japanese propagandist. Remember her, Neil? I asked for her the other day. What was her name? Tokyo Rose? Tokyo Rose. If you have that, thanks for the call, Chi-Chi. See, here's the thing about Obama. He's actually going very cautiously on Syria, because he knows that if he comes out in favor of the rebels who are al-Qaeda, Russia is liable to go to war with him. If we send aircraft to support the Syrian rebels and start bombing Assad's troops, the Russians will counter with their airplanes, and we will have a small world war. It could escalate very rapidly the way World War I began. And so you have to understand that although Obama is in fact supporting al-Qaeda through the Syrian rebels, he is wise enough to not go head-to-head with Russia right now because he doesn't need to start a larger conflagration. Even the leftists are smart enough not to do that. That's why he's holding back in his open support for the so-called Free Syrian Army. Do we have the Tokyo Rose? Let's hear Tokyo Rose.
Hello, you fighting orphans of the Pacific. House 6. This is after her weekend and back on the air sickly under you and I. Reception okay? Well, it better be, because this is all request night. And I've got a pretty nice program for my...
All right, well, you get the picture. She was a Japanese broadcaster who used to broadcast into the Pacific to our troops in the Pacific during World War II. And she would play music. She'd play the music that American boys were, you know, they were homesick. They were 18, 19-year-old kids. They didn't want to fight. They didn't want to kill, but they had to fight and kill as they saw their friend's guts hanging out. As General Patton said, don't worry, you'll know what to do when you see your friend's guts hanging out. That's the unfortunate horror of reality. So these kids were homesick, and they're sitting on the ships or the aircraft carriers or the cruisers or on the islands themselves, either after a battle or going into battle. And Tokyo Rose would give them hometown American, you know, music, big band music and whatnot. And then she would tell them not to fight, that the Japanese were winning, that there was no point in fighting, basically to put down their guns. And so that's how war was fought in those days through several fronts, including propaganda. And I got to tell you right now, we have the same thing going on, only in my estimation, our government itself is the propaganda arm of many of the anti-American elements that this country was built upon, meaning that we fought to build this country. Almost everything that was fought to build a nation to where it is today, almost everything. Almost everything. Everything that we built in this country, that our ancestors built, is being taken apart by these radical academic leftists. Whether they're doing it knowingly or unknowingly is hard to tell. It does not matter at the end of the day. 855-400-7282. I have some questions for you. But I think what I'm going to promise you, and I'll do when I come back in a few minutes, is the short Waleed Shubat interview, because last night it was 30 minutes. And Waleed Shubat says that Obama has a brother named Malik Obama, his half-brother from Africa, and he runs a front group for the Muslim Brotherhood that was given 501(c) status by the United States IRS under Lois Lerner. And Obama did so approvingly. And he did so because he is actually a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood all over the world. It's a shocking allegation. He is an Arabic speaker. He was a former member of the PLO and of the Muslim Brotherhood. He speaks Arabic, and he picked this up from Egyptian television itself, from a legitimate Egyptian broadcaster who's a member of the government, who says exactly what Waleed said. I can't play it now. It's only 2 minutes long. It's worth the wait. And I'll play it in a little while on the Savage Nation. Let's go to some of the callers now on the program. WMAL in Washington, D.C. Jerry, thanks for listening to the program. What's on your mind?
Colin, regarding your initial point about the president being held responsible for Benghazi, what had transpired there. Very simply, I think the man should be brought up on the charge of simply it's negligence, but the type of misfeasance for the fact that...
Hold on. Let's back up. You're a little too close to the phone speaker. Please step back a bit because you're popping your peas. Here's what I ask. Is Obama impeachable? Meaning, what has he actually done that's a high crime or a misdemeanor? I think what you're saying is his Benghazi gate is impeachable. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
Okay. So what part of the Benghazi story is impeachable?
Well, everything I've heard, just by newspaper or the news on the radio, I've heard very simply for the fact that, number one, he was advised of what was transpiring there at that time.
Okay, and you think that he knowingly let the ambassador get overrun by the enemy and killed? He wanted him dead?
He may not have wanted them dead, but the point is he had the responsibility for their protection, their security.
Oh, well, so that's just an error. You don't get impeached simply because you make an error.
Unless there's evidence to the
charge that he knowingly let the enemy overrun the embassy, and there are people who would say that because the guards were calling for help. And I'll give you an element of the story that has been lost already. There were three generals fired within 2 weeks, major generals and a major admiral, a fleet commander. Of a naval fleet commander, where they were all fired by Obama because every last one of them was ready to send help to the ambassador, and Obama or someone in the administration called them off. That's why the generals were fired, and that's why the admiral was fired. Now, if that evidence could come out at a trial, if we actually had an opposition party, you would then say that there's evidence of a crime, and that would be impeachable. But you know and I know that Boehner is not going to do that. Thank you for the call. See, I'll give you an example. That was timing. When I said thank you for the call, if the caller would have come back quickly, he would still be on. But because there was a pause, see, radio is such an instantaneous medium that if there's too long a pause, you go to another show. You hang up. You listen to music. You go to the internet. You clean your toenail. You floss your teeth. Your mind is going to jump. I know it. So I have to keep you listening. And so for the next several minutes, I want you to pay careful attention to these messages because they actually pay the bills. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Got some goat curry tonight. Feel bad for the goat. There's a sad story on my website about a carriage horse that dropped dead in Salt Lake City. It's so heartbreaking. It's right out of Animal Farm. Take a look at that picture. Here, calls to ban carriage horses after horror collapse, London Daily Mail. A petition demands to end this cruelty. The horse didn't die. His name was, Willie or something? I don't know what his name was. 13-year-old Jerry collapsed over the weekend due to a bout of colic. Carriage was. Look at the poor guy. A 13-year-old, his eyes are open. He collapsed near the end of a tour in Salt Lake City on Saturday. His leg was scraped as rescuers tried to lift him from the street. It is so unbelievable. But they saved him. They brought him back to his stable. I mean, God. You know, I mean, probably the Middle Easterners laugh at us. They kill animals while they're alive and eat their flesh. They throw it on a grill. You know, the camel doesn't pull anymore a load. They chop its head off. We are such a soft nation. But I'm one of the softies. I admit I feel bad for the horse. I have a soft spot for animals. I do. Look at the poor thing collapsed in the street. I don't know why they'd want to ban carriage horses. I mean, they don't look like they have a bad job. They run around in New York City. They got a nice life. You know, they got nice big hooves. The big hooves. They get good. The guy treats them well. They listen to happy people in the carriage. They're not doing anything hard. I'll tell you which animal suffers. You know, it's not the carriage horse. The bull. I would ban bullfighting. I hate bullfighting. It is an Arabic custom that was brought into Spain during the conquest by the Moors. Again, yes, that's right. Them again. The nice, sensitive people from Arabia. They brought it in, the bullfighting, to torture the animal. I always cheer for the bull when I see a bullfight. The running of the bulls, I pray, runs. He gives us six of them a horn. I love it. You got morons. They get drunk on cheap wine. They run through the street, and one of them gets trampled. The media goes crazy. Poor man trampled by bull during the running of the bulls. What is he there for? So the bull got one of the morons. They torture the poor things. The bullfight is, I don't know. You could say, well, it's very brave. I don't know what Hemingway was obsessed with it for. The whole thing of sitting in the arena, there was a little bit of I don't want to go into it because there were allegations to begin with, the tight pants, the toreador pants. I don't want to get into that part of it. That's his problem. And he's long gone. Let him rest in peace. You know, the tight pants from behind. Okay, the toreador, the pescador. I don't like the pecador. I don't like the toreador. I like pasta pescadoro, that pescatoro. It's the closest thing I like to it. I'll take the pescadoro, not the pescador. I don't eat pasta pescatoro anymore. It's all of the clamshell stuff. I'm sorry, many of you are in the shellfish business. I get like threatening emails every time I do an anti-shellfish show. I got to be careful. It's like some guy runs like a shellfish thing. Hey, Mike, hey, you're stepping on my toes. Hey, Mike, I normally like you. Knock off the shellfish tongue. I don't eat it anymore. I mean, they're bivalves. They're like in mud. They lay down. They're like sucking in. Like, imagine you know how you'd be a good biologist? You have to imagine you're the animal you're studying, or you're the organism, or then you're the cell, or you're the viroid. If you could actually imagine yourself as the viroid, you'd be a good gene splicer. You'd actually be a good biochemist or something today. You have to be able to project your mind into the organism. See, like we're talking about the horse. So you could empathize with a horse that pulls a carriage. But the geniuses in the fields of biological research can actually project their mind into becoming a virus. And they start to think, how does this virus enter a cell? So they become the virus. And then they can think about how to counter that. That's the way to be a great scientist. I guess it's in any field, it's empathy. At the end of the day, it's all about empathy, the ability. It's not all logic. I remember when I was, can I tell you that story? It's not boring. I think it's a decent story. When I was in botany many, many a moon ago, I was in ethnobotany, one of the early workers in the field collecting medicinal plants in the islands. I need to augment my Wikipedia entry on that. Many people don't know how important my research actually is turning out to be. There was a 92-year-old man I respect named Harold St. John. I was very young. He had done a book on the plants of Newfoundland when he was in 1917. I couldn't believe, and this one, I'm talking like the late 70s. I don't know, when was it? I don't even know the year anymore. I've lost time. And he told me at the end of the day, science is at one point, science becomes intuition. He said it becomes art. He said at the perimeters of science, there is art.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Nice song. I never liked them when I was young. I thought they were corny, but okay, you get older. I think it was George Bush taught me to love the Beach Boys. I think something along the lines. I started to appreciate them more as I got older. Clean cut. Where are they today? Are they still playing? They had a very nice rhythm to them. And nice clean cut. God only knows what they did at night 3 in the morning. But they had a nice clean cut image, that's all. I can't get my mind off this picture of the 13-year-old horse named Jerry laying in the gutter. Because he didn't even die of a heart attack. My sympathy goes out. I'm not going to do that thing. A guy died at 48. He was a very well-known head of a community. I don't want to, because I'll get the wrong image. And they gave him a burial. He had an air-conditioned coffin, they said. I don't understand that. You mean the electricity's on forever? He was actually being taken through the streets of Europe in an air-conditioned coffin. But he died at 58 is the point. And that's frightening. I say, oh, wow, he died of a heart attack, you know, like air-conditioned coffin. There it goes again. Like death is everywhere. No one wants to hear about death. I think people go to concerts to get away from death. And yet they go to these bands that are death, basically death-oriented. They go to the movies to get away from death, and every movie is about death and dying. Where do people turn today to get away from? You go to the church, it's about death. Think about it. It's everywhere. It's like the teachings of Don Juan. You know, death is with you wherever you go anyway, so what's the point of running away from it? You know, do you understand what I just said to you? People accuse me of being too maudlin. I mean, too depressing sometimes, not maudlin. Because I'm always focusing on, like, a dead horse or something like that. Or some cruelty about an animal, because I see, I project myself into the horse. If I look at the picture on my website of Jerry, the 13-year-old carriage horse, laying there in the street with his eyes open, because he collapsed at the end of pulling a carriage, he couldn't take it anymore. So I'm the horse laying there now. So what I'm saying is, okay, again, negative and death. Well, what do you want me to do, tell you happy jokes? I'm not Phil Silvers. It's not 1957. It's not the Catskill Mountains. They died anyway from bad food, from overeating. I want to finish that story that I started. I didn't explain it properly. I don't feel good about it. Okay, I'll make it shorter, though. When I was a graduate student, and I was an ethnobotany graduate student before I became a PhD student in nutrition, I did some very good research in ethnobotany. I collected plants in various far-flung islands of the South Pacific. Work with folk healers, pressed the plants, brought them back to museums, sent them around the world. And one of the museums was the Bishop Museum in Honolulu, and there was a great botanist who was 92 years old named Harold St. John. And I looked up to him for a couple of reasons. He worked like a monk in a monastery, all alone in that herbarium, and he would work on his plant specimens. He ate, you know what he ate for lunch? Lettuce. He ate lettuce. I used to look at his lunch, lettuce, like washed lettuce. That was it. He didn't get Indian buffet. He wasn't coming back, you know, complaining about dyspepsia. Lettuce. That's A. But what impressed me was it was about 1969, 70. Yeah, okay. He had published a book on the flora of Newfoundland that was dated 1917. I didn't understand how a man could have written a book and still be alive and functioning, but he did. So he was impressed with my research. I was a young graduate student, and He pulled me over to his table one day, and he said, here, look at this. He never talked to you by your name. He never had any pleasantries, very much like me. He'd say, here, look at this. And he pointed to a plant species that was unknown. It was a new species he was trying to name of a plant that he had collected. And he said, I want to show you something. He said, you see this species and this one? He said, this one is different. And he said, at a certain point, science is open to interpretation and it becomes art. I never forgot that, because at the outer limits of art, you're going to find people who are as finely tuned as scientists. And on the outer limits of great science or fine science, you're going to find people who have the mind of fine artists. That's something I've seen in my whole life. The precision of the art of the great artist is that of a scientist, et cetera, and so on. And that's a defining element in what I like in the world. Things that require enormous discipline. Enormous discipline, which is why if I go to a museum, I look at paintings from other centuries, by and large. I'm sorry, I'm really not into the 1950s and beyond. It seems to me that if I look at skill sets, to me, it didn't all start in East Hampton in 1951 with a drunk smearing Drek on a canvas. Sorry. I mean, I know the paintings are worth $300 million. It just doesn't do anything for me, the smearing of the paint on the canvas. So I go, let's say Bax. He said, well, why then do you like, Picasso? Because there's great skill. There's great skills, not just smearing. You can see great skill in what Picasso did. You can notice the skill. And you can notice the discipline that he trained. See, he was a trained artist prior to becoming an interpretive artist, as he were. You can call it anything you want. He was a skilled artist who had to go to school and study. And great discipline brought him to the point of being the Picasso that we know today. And the same with all the others. Discipline. Where is the discipline today in the art school? Zero. There is none. It all came down to a crash in the 60s with, if it feels good, do it. Let it all hang out. Let your inner person come out on the canvas. You know, take the clay and turn it into a psychopath face. That's art. It's not art. It's Drek. It's nothing. I don't care what it's worth. The people who are buying it because they're making an investment. Anyway, that's one man's opinion. So that's what I'm saying. I only like things that require enormous discipline, training, skill, and learning. Those are the only things I relate to in terms of, you know, learning or art. I thought I'd share that with you. Now, if you want me to turn that into a political statement, it's very easy. Obama is a complete and total fraud artist. A complete and total fraud artist. The longer we live with this man, the more naked the king looks. He has no clothes. The king has no clothes. And this is something interesting. He's starting to look like he knows it, too. Because I was shocked today in his speech. He started talking about how Republicans are coming to him and saying how they agree with him on this and that, but they're afraid of the Tea Party members running against them. What does that tell you? That they're all frauds. That the one-party system is threatened. That the status quo is frightened of the people. You understand that? So that's that. I don't have to get in too heavy into the politics. I mean, after all, you know, it's late for most people on the East Coast, but that's okay. People listen all over the whole night. They're into radio. It doesn't go off the minute I'm off, like some idiots say, I'm through with radio, the show, the radio. No, it's not. There's radio actually all night long, overnight, morning, noon, afternoon, 24 hours a day. There are people who can, you know, 855-407-2822. I don't know if I want to do Obama, any Obama calls. I'll knock out all the Obama calls, see what comes up. I don't want to do Obama bashing. I have a new call screen. He's very good, but it's too much already Obama. You know, I need to get away from that. I need a little lighter, something about a horse dying in the street. Something on the light order, like a horse dying in the street and you're heartbroken over the picture of Jerry the horse. The animal reportedly suffered a bout of colic, which caused the collapse. Animal advocates are now calling for a ban on horse-drawn carriage rides in the Utah City. Why? I don't understand that. Do you think horses that draw, like, that carry carriages are working too hard? The animal has to do something. It's called a beast of burden. What do you want it to do? What do you want it to do for a life? It has to do something. What do you want it to vote Democrat? Put it on food stamps? Well, Obama could sign him up. Think of all of the carriage horses that could become instant Democrats. There's a whole constituency right there. Oh, God. Nay, nay. Well, that's right. At least we'd have somebody saying nay to Obama. You know, remember, who was the Caesar who put a horse, who had a senator killed and put a horse in his chair? And he said, the horse has more sense than you do. One of the horrible Roman monsters. Like I saw a replay last night of Kubrick's version of Spartacus. That was an amazing movie. I didn't like Kirk Douglas as Spartacus, to be honest. He always had, like, spindly legs. He didn't look right for the part. It was at the age where they used Jewish guys from Brooklyn as Indians. He just didn't work. You know what I mean? I never liked that as a kid even. I wanted my Indians to be real Native Americans. Even then, I didn't like to see guys from Brooklyn with a tan. Like they took man tan and they became Indians. It was horrible in those days. The garbage they put out. Rory Calhoun was the cavalry officer. And then the Indian was a guy named Moshe Rabinowitz who went out to Hollywood and changed his name to some and put on man tan and they made him an Indian. It was horrible. Well, it was the same thing with Kirk Douglas as Spartacus. Why wouldn't they use somebody from the country of origin as Spartacus? They could have used, like, Mr. Universe, Steve Reeves. I was into bodybuilding at that time. So I wanted the guy who played Spartacus to be like a muscle man, like somebody with enormous, tremendous musculature. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger in his early days could have been a good Spartacus. But not Kirk Douglas. What? Kirk Douglas as Spartacus? What were they thinking? But the rest of the movie, the Roman Centurions, was staged so amazingly well in that Spartacus version. I love when they, like, marched, dum, 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 with all of their, you know, they all held a fascia. That's where the word fascist came from, by the way, for you people who use the word so loosely and don't even know what the word fascist means. Fascist refers to the fascia or sticks that the Romans held to basically control people, beat people, whatever. That's where the word fascia came from. So, you know, oh, he's a fascist. What, you don't agree with his politics? He's a fascist? Spying on Americans who did nothing wrong, that's fascism. That is using the big stick of Big Brother to overpower people and intimidate them. Using the IRS against your political enemies, as Obama has done, that is true fascism. That is using the big stick of taxation. You understand what fascism really is? Fascism is not standing up to the status quo. The reverse is true. At least that's one man's opinion. And now we've come to that point in the show where I must take a commercial break, and I'll be back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to Cafe Savage. I used to play this cafe music at the beginning of the show. Play it toward the end of the hour two. Now, look, I promised you the two-minute version of the Waleed Shobhat interview. Waleed was a member of the PLO, a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. He speaks Arabic, and he made a disclosure on the show last night that was a shocker. So let's listen to a short two-minute version of this 30-minute interview right now on the Savage Nation. Oh, the alleged gassing of the civilians in Syria, are those real corpses? Were they staged, and who did it?
Well, it's difficult to tell in this case. We have to wait. But let me bring the previous case. What happened to the previous case? I've examined even videos that we obtained. Americans don't even see these things. How the Free Syrian Army were able to have weapons cache of Scuds, tanks, SAM-7 rockets, all on video. In fact, even firing Scuds on video. And even having chemical rockets on video. Hello? You know, it is easy for the Free Syrian Army to stage. The Khan al-Assal situation was proven to have been a fraud. It was proven to be false. If it is true that in the previous event, the chemical attack came from Bashar al-Assad's army, why is it that in every single testimony from the victims themselves, it showed that it was the Free Syrian Army that lobbed that? How would that be strategically smart for Bashar al-Assad to be carrying out a chemical warfare in Syria when he knows it's exactly what the other side is looking for? So
not only that, but why would he carry it out the very week that the UN inspectors are on the ground? It makes no sense to me.
It absolutely makes no sense. It absolutely also makes no sense to me that Mohammed Morsi would be asking for the blind sheikh just days before Benghazi attack and right after the Benghazi attack. How does that fit strategically from a head of state of Egypt to be asking for the blind sheikh after Americans were killed in Benghazi? The Middle East doesn't make much sense, but we have to look at the source. Mohammed Morsi is an Islamist. Bashar al-Assad is not an Islamist. It doesn't serve him to do this kind of thing. The Christian community in Syria loves Bashar al-Assad. The people love Bashar al-Assad. The Russians love Putin. It's in America that we have the problem. We don't love Barack Hussein Obama. We can't stand him. He is on the side of the enemy. It behooves me that these days I'm looking towards Russia. I'm looking towards Putin. I'm looking towards Bashar al-Assad. And I lost every single hope that is left in my soul to trust this government that I'm living under.
Unbelievable. I can't add to that, nor can I subtract from that. Well, that was unbelievable is right. It was a heck of a compelling interview last night. It went on and on. I think we'll replay it at some point next week. Remember the Waleed Shobhat interview on the Savage Nation. Go to his website, shobhat.com, to learn more from his perspective. He was a former member of a terrorist organization, spent time in an Israeli prison. And he speaks Arabic, and he's quoting sources from Egypt who are telling us that Obama is a Muslim Brotherhood sympathizer. The Egyptians are screaming about it. So what can I say to you? You know, this is very serious stuff. It's very late at night, and the mainstream media has failed us completely. They don't exist. They ridicule anybody who dares challenge the king who has no clothes. But that's what our job is, to do their job. Remember, if they were doing their job, I wouldn't be in business. There's a strange irony here. If the midstream media were not performing high crimes and misdemeanors on a daily basis, I wouldn't be in business. I never would have had a career. So you say, oh, great. Well, no, not oh, great. I'd rather not have a career. I'd rather you be able to get Waleed Shobot on Good Morning America than on The Savage Nation, The Last Word in Talk Radio. I'd rather he be able to challenge the status quo on mainstream shows, but they won't go near him. Good Morning America is never going to cover anything like this. It's all, you know, sluts and demons all day long. WABC Jerry, fire away. You're up on The Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Jerry?
Hi there. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. How did you end up in San Francisco, and why the heck do you stay there? I don't get it.
Well, it's a beautiful city with the best climate on earth, but what is it? See, you don't have to love everything about a place to stay there. And you love New York? Is that it?
Well, I have traveled the country, and I've been to San Francisco many times, but man, New York brings me back. I'm an old Brooklyn family, grew up on Long Island, now I'm in Westchester. I need to be close to Manhattan.
I once knew somebody who moved away from New York, and then I heard about it. She was heartsick, and she said she didn't feel good. She was embarrassed by her upbringing. She went away to an Ivy League college. She tried to be sophisticated, and she said it wasn't until she got back to Brooklyn and heard her relatives and their friends screaming in a deli that she felt alive. She likes her hometown. That's it. I don't have that affinity. I ran away from those people. I couldn't stand it. I don't find it charming to have the pickle people around me. I was never enamored of the pickle eaters.
Hmm. Well, I'm not down.
But on the other hand, at this point, I'm not enamored of anybody except my dog and the seagulls. So what's?
I'm enamored of the dog, too.
No, I mean, I spend an awful lot of time in San Francisco and an awful lot of time out of San Francisco. Frankly, on the bay, in a surrounding suburb. I'm on the water. I look at the animals. I look at the seals. I look at the birds. I watch the seagulls fish. I watch the cormorants fishing at the end of a day. I watch various birds diving at dusk for dinner. And all I do is marvel at nature. I say to myself, gee, there's no food stamps for these birds. Either they fish and they eat or they die. And so I restore my sense of reality by watching animals. So you say, well, what's San Francisco? The weather's stupendous. Like tonight, what's the weather like in New York? Hot?
It's not too bad tonight. The humidity's gone down. We're about maybe 75 up here with low.
It's moving in and out. You see, I can't sleep above 60. So I have fog tonight coming in, and it's going to be outside my bedroom. I need three covers and flannel pajamas. I love the cool, cold air. I love the architecture of San Francisco. I love the versatility of the neighborhoods. There are tremendously different neighborhoods here. It's not New York. It's a province. San Francisco has been and always will be a provincial city, a charming provincial city. It is not a megalopolis. It is not New York City, London, Paris, Rome, Tokyo, Moscow, Mexico City. And there is a part of me that loves that. I used to love walking through Manhattan, stumbling upon various and sundry, but I can do that here, and frankly, my mind is so active I can do it sitting at my own desk. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
I hope so, and I hope you keep listening. Well, that about wraps up hour number two of The Savage Nation. Across
Join
America,
the
there
Savage
is...
Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282.
If talk radio came with a warning label, listen before it does. On the only conservative station in the Bay Area, Hot Talk 560, KSFO.
Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
And here is the latest news for hour number three of The Savage Nation for Friday, the 23rd of August, in the year of our Lord, 2013. Now, what I'm about to tell you can be found on michaelsavage.com. If you think I'm making any of this up, then you're crazier than your mother thinks you are. A new guide just discovered being published by the Defense Department refers to the Founding Fathers as extremists. That's right. A Department of Defense teaching guide meant to fight extremism advises students that rather than dressing in sheets, modern-day radicals, quote, will talk of individual liberties, states' rights, and how to make the world a better place. And then they describe 18th-century American patriots seeking freedom from the British as belonging to extremist ideologies. It was authored by a DOD-funded diversity training center. As I told you for 15 years, well, diversity is perversity. Now you understand the danger we're in. Our own Defense Department calls patriots extremists. So therefore, there's no mention of the hate groups such as the Muslim hate groups. Not one mention of Muslim hate groups or black supremacist groups or Hispanic supremacist groups such as La Raza. No. Anyway, you get the picture. The country has been penetrated and taken over by people far worse than Filthy Filner of San Diego, who resigned. At least he was caught with his pants down and finally was thrown out. Of course, he's making the city pay his legal bills. Filner resigns, exit deal okayed. Filthy Filner, who, by the way, looks like Mel Brooks in his early days. Has anyone noticed that he looks like Mel Brooks? That's Filthy Filner, the Democrat mayor, the deviant pervert, lurid allegations of repeated sexual misconduct against women, crippled his ability to lead. What do you mean crippled his ability to lead? In liberal circles, that would increase his ability to lead, right? Anyway, he's finished. That's another headline. And if you want the rest of it, are you ready for it on a Friday? Yes? Okay, well, here we are on michaelsavage.com. Let's go for it. Take the big gulp. Are you ready for the big gulp? Charlie Rangel, who was caught in a scam, you know, paying himself houses in Costa Rica, whatever. You know Charlie Rangel. Today he said there's no reason why a young person should have to pay for college. Okay, that means you'll pay for college so they can smoke dope and have sex for 12 years and then go back and live in their mother's house with a hairnet. What else is in the news? Would you like to hear the rest of it? You want to laugh? You want to cry? You want to criticize? Go ahead. See, if you criticize, I don't really care one way or the other. Because I can't hear your criticism. That's the beauty. By the way, if you really want to ruin your day and you hate me, go and read Rich Lieberman. Go read Rich Lieberman's article, which is on the top of michaelsavage.com, Why Savage Rules the World and the Rest of the SF National Broadcasters Are Posers. Oh, and by the way, your friend Nidal Hassan, the Muslim major who killed 13 and wounded 32 and shot them in cold blood, he was found guilty, eligible for the death penalty. And by the way, the Muslim major killed to help his Muslim brothers, according to his own testimony. But he's not considered an extremist, according to psychotic liberals like those who hate this show. See, here's the problem with me. I'm a born cynic. I was cynical, not born cynically. I can't say born. I was cynical at age five, six, I realized I was cynical, whether it was a product of my tutelage from my immigrant father. I have no idea, but I was so cynical at 5 years old. So I don't trust anybody or anything. I've been telling you that there's a one-party system in the country for the longest of times. I've told you it's, it's shades of left, shades of red. The Republicans are Democrat light, blah, 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 Republican, Democrat. I wake up this morning, I see this article. Romney's top donor teams with Soros front group on immigration reform. What? According to a new report from USA Today, GOP mega donor Paul Singer is helping fund the National Immigration Forum for its Evangelical Immigration Table Initiative. Singer is the founder and CEO of Wall Street hedge fund Elliott Management Corp. and the man who made Mitt Romney's 2012 campaign for president happen. Now, I told you I had dinner with Romney before the election up at the North Beach restaurant, 101, him and I, nice guy, liked him a lot. He would have been a better president than Obama in many ways. At least I would have slept at night not feeling that they were, you know, flying black helicopters against the American flag. But when I brought up immigration, he said, well, I can't really say anything about it, blah, 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 it would be considered racist. So, you know. So here we are. Here we are. These people are more dangerous than Filthy Filner. The false Republicans are more dangerous than the degenerate Filthy Filner. At least Filner was caught with his pants down, and we know who he is. The Republicans have not yet been caught with their pants down playing two sides against the middle. That's the problem. And then the news is so depressing, and it's such a cover-up. It is such a cover-up. I mean, the same every day, day in and day out and day in and day out. There's no opposition press. Nothing. Nothing. The poor white man, 89 years old, survives getting shot on Okinawa in World War II to be beaten to death with flashlights by two black youths for no reason other than he was white, not reported by the media. And if you report it, they claim you're being racially insensitive, or worse yet, a racist per se. That follows on the heels of the poor kid who was jogging in Oklahoma, shot by two blacks and one white. That, again, is not a racial incident. They say there's no reason to say it was racially, no racial implication. Oh, really? No kidding. Go look at the guy's website and see what he said. I knocked out five woods today. Wood is a dirty word for white people. Racist, through and through. The poor, misunderstood teens who are bored. How do you feel about that? What can you say about it? I mean, you want to make it worse than it is? The silence of Obama and Holder speak more loudly than any speech they could give. Last Friday, Christopher Lane, a 22-year-old Australian here on a baseball scholarship, was shot in the back and killed while jogging. He died where he fell, in a ditch. Nice-looking kid, a white kid. The shooter's black. Racism, a motive. Gang membership, a motive. White man was the target, according to the reports. They needed an initiation to get into some offshoot of the Crips or Bloods. And, of course, we learned that Shorty, an 89-year-old survivor of the Battle of Okinawa in World War II, nice old white man, was outside a little recreation hall, and he was beaten by a couple of black teens. But, see, not a word from Obama, not a word from Holder. They don't even know what happened, apparently. And they could stop this. They could put a stop to it as sure as I'm standing here, because remember, if these kids have no father figure, and Obama is the father figure for the country, especially for those kids who have no fathers, he could get up there and say in no uncertain terms, I want to be very clear about this. This is going to stop, and it's going to stop now. And if you ever commit anything like this, we will track you to the ends of the earth, and you'll never see the light of day. We will lock you up and throw the key away. He could say that. He could do it every day, and it would put a damper on these idiots. But he hasn't said it. And Holder, who lectured the American Bar Association last week in San Francisco about the greatness of lawyers, has said nothing about this epidemic of interracial violence. If you go back to the end of World War II, 90% of black families had a mother and a father and children. And the children were disciplined by the mother and father. And the churches were strong. And the schools were strong. They taught right from wrong. They were strongly Christian in those days. What happened? Tell me what happened. The Great Society came along under that demagogue, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Democrat. And we now have the state of decline we're in today. Today, 73% of black kids are born to single mothers. Black kids who make it to the 12th grade may often be found reading at 7th, 8th, or 9th grade levels. In some cities, the black dropout rate can hit as high as 50%. Why? It's terrible. Among black males ages 18 to 29 in urban areas, about a third are in prison or jail or on probation or parole. So where do these kids get an idea of what's right and what's wrong, what's good and what's evil? It's certainly not from the church. It's certainly not in the schools. It's certainly not from the father. It's from the vermin in the media. It's from the rats in Hollywood. It's the garbage that the media sends into their brain. Every show, every movie, guns, violence, guns, violence. If you're a man, you have a gun. And here's Weinstein partying with Obama in Martha's Vineyard. I never saw a movie Weinstein made it. There wasn't a gun in it. Maybe there was one or two. I don't know where it comes. So crime, where is it coming from? It's coming from the lack of leadership in the country. And where's the NAACP today on these murders? They demanded a Justice Department investigation and an FBI investigation of a rodeo clown running around a bull ring in an Obama mask. But the NAACP has so far not addressed this interracial murder epidemic which is emerging in the country. Where is Jesse High Jackson? Where is Al Sharpton after this cold-blooded murder of Chris Lane and now of this old man? Remember when Trayvon Martin was shot? The president felt obligated to speak. He said that if he had a son, he would have looked like Trayvon Martin. He said 35 years ago, I could have been Trayvon. And yet the president has not found the inner Obama to talk about the parents of Chris Lane or to the survivors of this old man? What caused this meltdown in the black community? Liberalism. Lyndon Baines Johnson introduced the so-called Great Society 50 years ago. Trillions of dollars on food stamps, welfare, civil rights, housing, health care. Controlling police who do their job. And what has happened? Did the society become more law-abiding? Did the kids become better behaved? We were told that if we had the Great Society and we spent trillions of dollars on the poor and the deserving, why there'd be a moral and cultural blossoming in America. Yeah, well, it didn't happen. Nope, it didn't happen. The real America is happening right in front of your eyes. And the interracial violence is largely black on white. There's an epidemic. The rats in the media, of course, are not going to report it. They're cowards, and liberals are stuck in the 60s. They still see it through the lens of the 1960s. They will forever have bell bottoms on the bottom of their minds. They will forever have crystals in front of their central cortex. They will forever be addled by LSD on their souls. And now we in America are facing a shocking cultural revolution. And you have to ask yourself, does Obama's silence, does Holder's silence, does this silence speak louder than words? It's a sad day in America when you have such a cynical leadership. There's no better word for it. Cynical leadership. Cynical leadership. With no moral center, just an agenda. No moral center, just a far-left agenda. Bring it all down, girl. Turn man against man. Turn black against white. Turn white against black. Turn, you know, one race against another. Turn one sex against another. Divide and conquer. Pure, absolute, absolute madness. Power madness like we've never seen in our lifetime. All coming from that nice man with a nice wife with nice children. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
15 people show up at Bloomberg anti-gun. 15 people show up at Bloomberg anti-gun rally. Yeah, that's a hot one. That is a hot one. I can't do the Shorty death. I can't do the death of the little old man. I can't. I can't do it anymore. There's a race war brewing. It's being fanned by, well, let us just say there's a race war being fanned by some very bad elements in this country. Very bad. Because for a guy who comes out and talks about the Trayvon Martin tragedy and then says nothing about the beating to death of a little old white man and the shooting of an innocent white runner shows you which side of the aisle this guy is on with regard to racial enmity. That's all. And I don't want to go into it. It's Friday night. That's all. I'll take callers. 855-407-282. It's the Savage Nation. Any topic is fair game. Let's begin. I'll begin on the East Coast. WABC in the heart of New York City. Bobby, welcome to the Savage Nation. Bobby, what's on your mind?
Hi. Oh, God, you cracked me up. You're terrific. You remind me of my tuna fish crowd that used to sit in the back steps at City College. We were all first-generation Americans, too afraid to pick up the South Campus girls, so we would sit there eating our tuna fish salad sandwiches.
I know the crowd. And when I was a kid at Queens College, it was largely first-generation Americans like myself. And there were two cafeterias. There was the little cafeteria where the intellectuals went, mainly the hot nymphomaniac chicks with long blonde hair that we were just awed by. And then there was the big cafeteria where regular people went.
Oh, the girls at Queens College were beautiful. I took a couple of summer courses, but I was too much of a nerd to make any action, but they were gorgeous.
Yeah, but look, where are you today and where are they today? Most of them are with the Transfusion Tree in Boca Raton if they're still alive. And yeah. and you're still pumping along there. I mean, you must have, you sound like you got the Ever-Ready battery.
No, they're sitting around in Florida complaining or wearing the peace symbol, complaining that they're not Jane Fonda and making...
Why are they still wearing the peace symbol belts from the 70s? Who are they angry at? Who is it who's conducting the war but their own hero?
They're on the sugar. What do you want?
Yes, that's an old German word for crazy.
Exactly.
Now, what is Bobby, what's your question tonight on the Savage Nation?
The question was, I grew up on Gene Shepherd, one of the greatest raconteurs of all time. And you're getting real close to being like him. He was one.
Oh, thanks for the half compliment. I appreciate it. But the answer is no. Everyone says, oh, you remind me of Gene Shepherd. I must tell you, I swear to you, as God is my witness, I have no recollection of having... Most young people do not listen to talk radio. I'm talking 15, 16. They don't listen to it. I listen to music. That's all I listened to as a kid. Occasional ball game. That's it. I was the average, you know, kid. I didn't even know what talk radio was. I had no... My father, I found out years later. I found out from relatives because he died before... Well, he died in 1970. I heard he was a big talk radio fan. Maybe he had it on in the background and I didn't even know it.
Well, it wasn't exactly talk. It was sort of like telling everything that you do.
Well, he didn't go to Indian buffets because there were no Indian buffets in those days. Did he talk about a dog?
That was wonderful. He would talk about everything from World War II through present day without putting any political slant on anything.
Oh, he avoided politics, which is why he remained a local host.
Well,
he never made it into the National League. I mean, he was a good local host, so... I don't remember him. He died in 1999. I just looked it up on Google. Well, I like that you're listening. You're Friday night, obviously. You got nothing else to do. You have no friends, no family, no lovers, right? So I'm it.
You. But you sound real good.
Thank you. I like the half compliment. That shows he went to Brooklyn College. That he can't give a full compliment. Instead of saying, I love your show, I listen to Gene Shepherd, and you're better. No, you're almost as good as him. You hear? But this is the way I grew up with this. You never get a straight-out compliment, ever.
Savage.
Look, it's Friday. What do I care? I'll do what I want. Filthy Filner is gone. We can breathe a sigh of relief. Every day, the brainwashing. Transgender this, transgender that. They make them more sacred than nuns. I never saw anything like it. It's like a new holy grail in America. Transgender is a new category where they're cleaner than a nun, better than a nun, more revered than a nun. I never saw the brainwashing. The brainwashing. Every day. So here are some of the questions for the Savage Nation for this Friday. Number one, the Muslim major Nidal Hassan was found guilty on all counts today. Let's hear a round of applause. Nidal Hassan convicted in Fort Hood shooting. A military jury today convicted Army Major Nidal Hassan of 13 counts of murder and 30 counts of attempted murder in November 2009, shooting rampage at Fort Hood, Texas, where he killed all those people in cold blood, shooting them in the head as they lay on the ground dying. Now, I could say to you, this is great news, but do you actually think the Army will send him to a shooting a squad? What do you call that, a shooting squad? I don't even know what it's called, because they don't do it anymore. Firing squad. Do you think they will give him the death penalty? I don't think so. NSA analyst intentionally abused spying powers multiple times. That's boring. Why is that a boring topic? You know, it's interesting. That topic, you're not going to... Who cares about the NSA spying on us? You assume they do it, right? Especially under Obama, who you know is a left-wing communist dictator. So why shouldn't they spy on everybody while he lies about it? His ambassador, Samantha Power, who's married to a left-wing psychotic named Cass Sunstein, missed the Syria session for a personal trip. They found her in Ireland today. That's after the news broke of a gas attack in Syria. I suppose her husband, Cass Sunstein, had a gas attack from the corned beef and cabbage in Ireland, but that's no excuse to stay away from the meeting. Coburn, remember Coburn? Brilliant man from the heartland. Senator Coburn, by the way, a doctor, by the way, said that there's a possibility of impeachment at a town hall today. And, of course, the left went berserk. When it was raised about Bush, no problem. Now, all of a sudden, every one of the left-wing fanatics is out there saying, how dare you talk about impeachment for our guy. For example, today... Obama's brain, David Axelrod, the lifetime leftist street agitator, went on his favorite outlet today, More Snotty Nonsense by Chicks, in clip three, suggested that impeachment is a terrible thing to talk about. Listen to clip three.
When you think about the history of the last 20 years and the escalation of this kind of rhetoric, there are consequences for this country, not just for this president. I mean, obviously, there's not going to be an impeachment. But when you, you know, what we've seen obviously is a... Qualified by both sides, by the way, but I think more so by the Republicans, disqualify whoever is the president of the United States, not just debate them, not just disagree with them, but render them illegitimate. And that is dangerous for this country.
Okay, now here's the question. Don't bring up the birth certificate. That's a dodo. What has Obama done that's impeachable? Now, remember, the standards are pretty high. You know, grounds for impeachment are very high. They have to be crimes or misdemeanors, right? High crimes and misdemeanors. High crimes, not high times. We're talking about high crimes, not high times. High crimes and misdemeanors. So what crime, other than expanding the power of the executive branch, stepping on everyone's rights, these are very clever people. Have they actually committed high crimes and misdemeanors? What are they? I mean, it's an interesting question, and I'd like your answer. 855-407-282. Then there's the interracial murder going on in the country, one after the other, not covered by the media. You know, this is very, it's a troubling time to live in. And you see, no one seems to care about it. The deceit is so great. The interracial crime is so high. The lies coming out of the White House are so vile. The lack of coverage in the media is so debilitating that I feel narcoleptic on the Savage Nation today. It's the end of August. I mean, really, look how far we've gotten together. Do you realize it's the 23rd of August and normal people are in Provence or wherever they go, Tuscany, Provence? I have no idea why they go there. What do they do there? How can they take themselves? How can they sit and drink every afternoon and tell themselves how lucky they are to be in Tuscany or Provence? How many fine meals can they have? And congratulate themselves and their friends about being so lucky to be sitting here in the south of France, enjoying the beauty of France. How can they take it? That's why I sit here in front of the microphone. I have to admit, look, it's the last word in talk radio. That's true. And today being Friday, it's open mic to mic. Any topic is fair game. And I've touched on big ones this week. People are saying, how is the media so bad that they don't even report that Obama has a brother who's running the Muslim Brotherhood? You remember Wally Schubert last night? One of the best shows I've ever did in my life. Lost. It's the Savage Nation. Open mic to mic. Any topic is fair game. 855-407-282. See, here's the thing about talk radio that you don't know. As a veteran of broadcasting these 19 and a half or some odd years, what you have to do is understand that the audience is not the same every day, not in size, not in intensity, not in intelligence level, not in interesting level. No, it's never the same. There are regulars, but they don't even listen every day. That's the first thing you got to know. There's no one listening every second to what, you know, brilliant statements come out of your mouth or whatever news you're exposing. It's a rotation. It's a rotation job. So on a Friday, it's a slower show to begin with. A lot of normal people are... coming home from dinner right now. They don't even know what's going on, nor do they care. They have indigestion. They're going to home. They can't wait to go home to take an Alka-Seltzer or an Nexium. That's all I know. They have indigestion from the clams oreganata and the cheap wine that they had down on Mulberry Street. They have no idea why they feel sick. They feel they're having a heart attack. They don't know whether they should be cremated if they die. They're getting the flashes right now, many of them. Many people, even young people, fear death after a heavy meal in bad restaurants. And they get a sweat and a cold sweat. They're with the wife and kids or with the wife. And the guy says, oh, my God, I'm only 40, 41. My father, what if I die? And then all in a flash, should I be buried? Should I be cremated? Where should I be buried? Should it be an air-conditioned coffin? Should it be a mausoleum? I don't know. I don't want to plan about it. This goes through the mind in about 30, 40 seconds. All in a flash, either while they're driving or the wife is driving. Then they get home and it passes. The pain goes up from the stomach to the right shoulder. They're convinced when it hits the right shoulder of the gas, they're dead. They're positive they've had a heart attack, and they're ready to call 911 the minute they get in the door. And then all they got to do is loosen their pants. You know, by the way, the next time you think you're dying, I'll give you a little hint. Loosen your pants and take three deep breaths and take an aspirin. and then dial 855-400-7282, and I'll pick up the call. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Look at him sway with it. Where is he today? He was loved by married women. They always had it. My day, like the mothers, if there was an entertainer, the first thing the mothers would say, turn him off, was he was a family man and he would never cheated on his wife. The women cared about it in those days. I would listen. I was in the, they would be in the kitchen moving around the breadcrumbs with the serrated knife on the oilcloth tablecloth in Queens. The women would talk. I don't know why. I was always in the dining room listening to what the wise women were saying. That was before the wise Latinas arrived. There actually were wise women around before them, believe it or not. Some of them were ordinary people in Queens, New York, and they'd sift the crumbs with their serrated bread knives. And by the time the coffee hour was over and those women got through talking and the crumbs were very finely sifted, they had resolved all the personal problems in their lives and all of the world's problems. And I felt the world was a good place to live in, you know? But one of the, like Perry Como, I was thinking, when he sang, no one knows who he is anymore. The women liked him. Why? Because he was known as a family man. That's how they judged an entertainer. If he was a no-good rat, like a filthy filler, they wouldn't listen to him. They wouldn't go to his records, nothing. Today, it's the opposite. Filthy Filner resigned today, the guy from San Diego. Does anyone out there, anyone listening to the show know who I'm talking about? The degenerate San Diego mayor for touching women, this and that. Allegedly touching women, pardon me. Here's the thing about it. He looks like Mel Brooks as a younger man. Now, I couldn't understand who he looked like, Filthy Filner. Didn't he look like Mel Brooks, really? Like, you know, all he needed was the same face. I did get a compliment today. An article was written in the local San Francisco Rag by Rich Lieberman, 415 Media. And I got to tell you, I don't know Rich. He writes a radio blog. I'll read you parts of it. And he's in the most psychotically liberal, intolerant, intellectually dishonest market in the world, which is San Francisco. So he came to like my show over the years, and he wrote, I got another email. It was about my, quote, savage fetish. I put it up on michaelsavage.com if you want to read it. So I'll read you a few lines from it. Savage fetish? What's that? Was I amused? No. Was I irritated? No. I get a lot of email. No biggie. Part of the trade. It did annoy me, he writes, that this particular emailer said that I had a fetish with my various writings about Michael Savage, as if it were against the law here in the high and mighty progressive San Francisco Bay Area to dare opine that Savage ruled the market, which he does. Hell, he's the de facto king of the syndicated radio world. How do I know, he writes? Have you listened to the current tripe? Are you kidding? It's not even close. Savage, he says, but we'll leave it now for the Bay Area per se. He writes, Savage has always intrigued me as something of a broadcast raconteur, a virtual artist who paints a different tapestry each and every day. He can be irksome, slightly crazy in a sort of entertaining way, but he gets you. Now, people have always underestimated my genius. They've always called it crazy, Rich. You got to understand that you need an education level to understand where genius begins and craziness ends. And I forgive you your lack of education, but okay. He goes on, he says, he invigorates you, he makes you listen, and he has you gushing, laughing, commiserating, and in full messianic state of mind virtually the entirety of his program. That's good writing. That's a pretty damn good template. In far contrast, he writes, we have here in the Bay Area a bunch of self-serving, narcissistic, impish poseurs with a pimple of Savage's talent. Hey, way to go, Rich. That's not a knock necessarily. It's just the gosh darn truth with a healthy piled high scoop of reality. Good writing, Rich. Ron Owens, he writes, the morning audio scribbler long ago checked out and left his KGO show to where it is today, a mishmash of predictable go-to minutiae that is supposedly still the mainstay among his dwindled listeners. Only Owens, who continues to sell mattresses and other tired two-bit topics on a daily basis, is now simply irrelevant. Remind me, these are his comments, not mine. I don't know who Owens is. I heard of him years ago. I used to call him Mr. Softy. I don't call him that anymore because I don't want to hurt his feelings. Those few sycophants who still listen, maybe it's they who have a real fetish. Ron Owens, even in his twilight, even when he checked out a long time ago, could at least do a decent hour of political interviews and a cup full of novelty. Now, having arrived merely to get one last hurrah and a few paychecks, is lost in the daily shuffle. He sounds bored, tired, uninspired, like he walked in from a deep sleep. Maybe the mattress affiliation is perfect symmetry. He's just damn tired and uninteresting, makes you want to go to sleep. How ironic, in the land of so-called tolerance and progressive worth, do we have such a lack of tolerance and intellectual dishonesty, he writes. That's not an opinion, it's a fact. We like to think that here in the San Francisco area that we're special, that we're above the fray, above the tepid screaming and yelling, polarized climate. BS, he writes. We're the biggest hypocrites around. We espouse openness and ask for, insist upon, freedom of thought and opinion, even if we don't necessarily agree. Yeah, right. Again, totally unmitigated BS to the 10th power. Truth is, we're nothing even remotely like that, to which we like to brag and make ourselves out to be special and unique. And he goes on and on. And here's where the dynamic of a Michael Savage stands out. Savage, we're told, don't listen to him. He's an SOB. A bizarre, scary SOB. You know what? That's why I listen. He writes, why I've become a regular and decided to buy in, not because I necessarily buy into his politics. Savage is consistent, and his show, unlike the wussy, sweet nothings of the local radio glee clubs, has a ton of genuine residue, command, performance, and pathos. It's like a fine dinner and wine that you sit down to and enjoy, even if you quietly worry about the extra carbs you probably don't need. Savage is genuine, too, for better or worse. He doesn't always come across as warm and fuzzy, but at least he's not intellectually or personally dishonest. And he goes on and on and on. He can tell funny stories and mix in a tale or two about meatballs, Chinese food, his dog Teddy, and crank and make you squirm, but at least you know where he's coming from and can put up with it. The other posers, the phonies, the quasi-intellectuals who think their blank doesn't think, are mere pretenders, morsels, sweet nothings, and they bore me, he writes. I'm tired of pretending to apologize that I like Michael Savage. And he goes on. He says, a few weeks back, Savage was talking about human frailness. It was interesting. He stopped and coughed. He complained that the Indian food he consumed a little earlier had made him uncomfortable. It was a classic. It proceeded to make me belly laugh. I don't know why. Maybe it's an acquired taste, but I laughed. Later in the hour, Savage spoke of the Berkeley liberals who eat only gluten-free pizza, praise the Messiah Obama, and spread sprouts on their limited lawn. As I do frequently, I stopped, I gathered it in, I shook my head with a bit of a squirm. I thought, yo, Mike, did you have to say Messiah? How cruel, how terse, how inflaming, how true too, damn it. And he goes on, and then he ends like this. He says, Savage is not for everybody, and at times even me, but I'm carved into the mix. Rich writes, my Jewish mother is from Brooklyn and is a harsh critic. She doesn't laugh at anything. She hated E.T. and thought she looked a lot like Yoda. She thought The Wizard of Oz was too long. She doesn't like chicken soup. But she laughs with Michael Savage. Go figure. The article is by Rich Lieberman, 415 Media, and he calls me the king of syndicated radio. And thank you, Rich. I still haven't met Rich, by the way. I don't go out with the guy and ask him to do it. But he's gone into the radio world on a local station. He's come to understand what it's like to walk in the other man's microphone for 10 minutes. And I want to bring it up to another area here. I could do a lot of politics, and you know I do. I do it all week. But I realize something. Sometimes I hear Obama speak, and I want to scream. And I wish that I could get a question in once. I wish somebody in the media would ask him one question. Like, is there any truth to the fact that your brother Malik Obama runs a front group of the Muslim Brotherhood, and your IRS gave him a 501c3 status? A question like that. You know, is it true that there were Scud missiles in Libya that your ambassador was trying to ship to the Syrian rebels? Or another question, why do you continue to back the enemies of America who we apparently are fighting and you're backing? Questions that are not being asked. And then I realized he's insulated, he's the president, he'll never answer any real questions. But then I realized in some ways talk show hosts are not dissimilar. We do take calls, but they're screened. They're screened. And if we get a crazy, angry, hating caller, we don't take them. And we don't take them not because I can't handle them. I could. They're bad radio. If you were listening to the radio show, do you want to hear screaming and yelling? I turn it off. It's not good radio. But I will dare say that if you have a legitimate criticism of anything I've actually said, I'll take your call. If you're going to start calling and cursing me out, you're not going to get on number one. And if you have no point to make, there's no point in calling. But I'll take criticism. Go ahead. Make my day. Tell me what I actually said, not what you think I said, or what you thought I said, or what you imagined I said, or what you read I said, or what you think I said. Tell me what I actually said that was A, false, or B, offensive. Is that fair enough? I don't know if you'll get on. There's absolutely no room to get on, truthfully, right now. Although it's Friday night, and the tent is not 100% full, the board is sold out. I just wanted to tell you one last thing. When I began a radio, I had an image of what radio shows are. You're like a preacher inside a revival tent, and it's a huge revival tent, a giant revival tent, and we're known by AQH, average quarter hour. The average quarter hour could be 60,000, it could be 600,000, it could be enormous. But just imagine a baseball stadium-sized tent. Now, sometimes you go into that tent, and there's nobody waiting for you. It's an empty auditorium along the lines of Obama's speeches lately. Other times you come in there waiting for you. The stadium is packed. But most of the time, it's a quarter full and they start to come in. And if you do a good show, that stadium gets packed by the end of the first hour. They're standing room only. And then if it's really good, by the second hour, they're outside that tent with their ears against the canvas. You understand the imagery that I use? It's a one-man band. And you have to use imagery, or else you wind up like Filthy Filner.
Savage.